Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. It's Thursday, October 13th, 2016. I'm Michael Kohlberg. I'm a psychotherapist today talking from Hudson, New York. And I am here with my friend Ann.
And I'm here in Costa Mesa, California, where it's 7 in the morning. I got up with 5 alarms and I managed to get everything moving. Out here for an astrology conference. With ISAR, the International Society for Astrological Research. And we are here on Scorpios Talking. We're a couple of Scorpios, Michael, a real Scorpio, me, a progress Scorpio, sit and talk about the current events from the perspective of Scorpios. So, Michael,
I'm progress.
Wild crazy out there, huh?
I'm progressed.
You are progressed, too. You're progressed, you're progressed out of Scorpio into a wiser sign.
Yeah.
You're a wise guy now. Yes. Not that you weren't wise before, but you're even more wise now. Yeah. Everybody progresses. That means we ripen over time. We're born in our birth sign, and then we progress to the next sign after that, and the one after that, and the one after that, maybe. Sometimes we get to 4 signs. I was born a Virgo, and at 12 I turned into a Libra, and I was a Libra from 12 to 42. And then I turned into a Scorpio, and I've got a few more years as a Scorpio, and then hopefully I turn into a wild and crazy Sag. And you were born a Scorpio, and you progressed into being a Sag, and then you went into a Capricorn, which is serious and reliable and dependable, and you're currently running Capricorn. So you're hardworking and deep thinking, as we say. So what's new in your world? I haven't talked to you because we missed last week because I completely slept right through it. The bad part about being 62 is you sleep through things. But you, what's up? New and exciting.
I'm good. We're kind of spending the week here and go back tomorrow. It's very beautiful here. We've had great weather.
Yes. Yo, the weather's been wonderful, hasn't it? It's like fall.
And I kind of see lots of battles going on, but I feel like I'm flying over them, so I'm not involved in any of them, but there are lots of them.
Yes. Yeah, and this weekend there's a big one. Everybody's going to be very crabby. Big full moon this weekend, and it's got Uranus on it, so we can expect lots of changes from it. And we are having a lot of, you know, just tension in the world. You know, whether you're watching the debates in the United States or you're having it in your own life, the energies are asking you how you want to, for lack of a better word, individuate from your life. How do you want to say, this is who I am, and this is what I would like, and then I get you want that, and okay, so let's chat. So there's a lot of energy around viewpoint is the best way to think of it. And the conversational planet, Mercury, is having a fight with Mars, the planet of war. So there's this kind of power struggle going on between what your idea is and how you're going to execute it, or your idea as you're presenting it to other people. So it's interesting. We had a welcome banquet. I'm speaking at the conference. I'm part of the faculty. So we had a welcome banquet last night for the, not banquet, but reception for the, they had these really good mushroom things, Michael, little brioche, little mushroom blinis with, you know, sauteed mushroom. That was very good.
Okay.
But one of the president of ISAR said, so we're really redefining, you know, we're thinking about what astrologers are. What is our mission here as astrologers? How do we, you know, we're kind of being asked, or we are in the process of redefining, you know, what astrology is, and it's totally different than what it used to be in the 70s and 80s. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So, you know, we're all redefining for ourselves what we want to. So I think that's important. Or defining the next chapter, maybe, is a better way to say it. So what have you noticed in the
well,
in your life around that theme? Or any theme, actually, because you know there's a lot of stuff.
I mean, I have two things to say about what I heard you say. So
mm-hmm.
The first one is astrology's probably always been the same, but the mm-hmm. way that humans are decoding it has changed in the past few years.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay,
so,
that makes sense.
In other words, I remember sitting in a meeting when I was on the faculty, the child and adolescent psychiatry at NYU, and there was something that was quite obvious to me that needed to happen to safeguard a little girl, and the rest of the people there were not really willing to do it politically. So the chair of the department said that there's really no I can't think of the word. There's no academic evidence. There's no scientific evidence to prove what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. What you were saying.
Meaning that nobody's brought up a study that proved what was obvious right in front of us. And
right.
It could be argued that nobody thought there was any need to prove something so obvious. But it was, be that as it may. And I said, well, all evidence showed that the Earth was flat. And then one day, they had the headline of the tablet, you know, evidence shows Earth is round, and the Earth was exactly the same shape, going, these people are idiots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it
I've
didn't change. Right. So it didn't change. It's our understanding or the meaning that we're making of stuff is changing. But it's the same. You know, and that's a really important thing. It's coming up. There's some way that it comes up around something important all the time, every day now, if you look for it. It's like, what meaning are we making of some set of facts?
Right.
And all of that meaning is our projection. Like, the facts are the facts.
Oh, the meaning is our projection. Interesting.
Right? I mean, it's our, what we take away and what, you know, it's us filling in some blanks because facts are facts.
Right.
But then we turn it into, ultimately, often, good or bad, right or wrong.
Right.
But it's just neutral. It just is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then based upon that meaning, we chart a course, and that's what's falling apart at the moment.
The course or the meaning that we're finding?
All of it. That's why the courses aren't going. The courses seem to be going around in a circle quite often.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is that all of the big problems that we have, the significant ones, we don't have answers for. So if we just got as far as identifying what the situation is,
mm-hmm.
we could just pause and go, so what are our options? And what are our talents? And what are our challenges? And then very slowly we could actually move forward. It goes, and then the other thing I wanted to comment on is you said these are the things that we individuate with. So I started taking Sue Johnson's course in emotionally focused therapy, and she's a researcher who has come up with a way of doing couples work that particularly appeals to me because it's based on attachment style, which is kind of fundamentally how we enter any relationship with ourselves or others.
That's the part about how you look at people, right?
Well, how we connect with people.
Connect with people, yeah.
Like, are we securely connected? Do we try to avoid connection because it's too difficult for us to feel our needs.
Mm-hmm.
So we
mm-hmm.
we just have an experience of not needing anything, but that's not actually reality-based. And I'll explain why. Or are we constantly needing to have proof to us that somebody cares? So in other words, no matter what they do for us, that just brings you up to the present, but it says nothing about the future, and we can't really take that security forward with us, so we're constantly looking for more validation. But she is a researcher, and she's saying mammals actually do need to connect. Like, they don't do well with no connection.
Mm-hmm.
So although couples therapy, and I'm really simplifying something, but couples therapy and a lot of the self-help movements and stuff for years have been saying we have to individuate We can't be all these words like codependent, enmeshed, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. It has always had a bad rap to it. So in other words, people who are entwined were perceived as being somehow damaged. Well, that's mm-hmm. not the way that mammals operate. So instead of individuating from things and individuating from your partner, actually we should be individuating with. So we stay in connection and we learn how to be wholly ourselves so mm-hmm. that who we are is able to have as full an expression as possible. But that doesn't mean that it's at the expense of a connection with another. So there's room for two individuals, and they stay in connection.
Right.
So,
but
I mean,
also,
the example...
Do you think that, though, because there's such a focus on, well, what my version of the reality is this, do you think that that's affecting the connection ability with people?
I think there's crowd control going on. I think that human beings have been led to believe that they're supposed to be autonomous, that each individual is supposed to have all the answers. And so everybody walks around at some level feeling as though they are deficient.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there are people like Trump who appear to be totally self-referential, meaning that they have all the answers. They do not need any input. But
right.
as I've said before, I think clinically he's defending against the enormous feeling of empty that threatens him if he's not right.
Right.
So there's no place in there for him to be himself, regardless of whether he's right or wrong. So his entire sense of himself is based upon having a feeling of either inferiority or superiority, which is why he's constantly trashing everybody else, because he only can have an experience of himself in relationship to others, and he needs to either be better than or worse than.
Right. There's
so in each interaction, he needs to play this out, which is why all this stuff's coming out now. Because these were, they were heinous experiences for the victims, but I don't think he meant a whole lot, because I don't think he follows through on a lot of things. So he was just kind of sucking their energy to show that he was superior to them.
Right.
It wasn't really... I don't think his intention was consistently to sexually assault people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's still abusive,
it wasn't predatory like violence in the sense of I want to beat you up or anything. It was predatory like I want to prove I can have you.
Well, it wants to humiliate. I mean, it's certainly a huge boundary issue. The effect on the victims is the same, because they have no idea what his intention is. So the action is still has the same impact on the victims. They feel violated and justly.
Mm-hmm.
But his intent, I don't think, was to follow through. His intent was to feel more.
Right.
So if if there's a lot, all this crowd control, and everybody is being made, we're being pushed to feel separate.
Mm-hmm.
Just before we went on air, I was reading something about, I read a whole bunch of newspapers in the morning. It was in the Post, so you know, whatever. But it was,
we love the Post.
It was that Putin's
Post.
Calling a lot of. Upscale Russians back to the country and diplomats and stuff. So what is in his mind about it's probably he doesn't have peaceful intention, but it's creating more separation is the point. And the more we're separated from each other and the more that we fail to accept that we are profoundly interconnected, the less able we are to connect with ourselves.
Right, right.
Because we're distracted by being better than or more correct than others. And that's just bullshit.
Right, right, right. But that's part of the whole, I want to call it mind control, or, you know, it's just
crowd control.
Crowd control, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if you keep people separated, then they're not together.
Right. Mm-hmm. They don't have a vision of how to get. They don't have a vision of how to do it either. So, because they aren't being taught, like encouraging you to connect, encouraging you to relate to others. When you're not taught how to do that. You know, this then gives you a different vision of how to get there. So.
Well, we're taught how not to do it, you know, in a billion ways.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, in schools, there's a bell curve so that people are, you know, pitted against each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Countries with the number of human beings who are moving from geographic location to geographic location, we're making it their problem, not our problem, and it's our problem.
Right.
You know, they're moving for a reason. Is it war? Is it famine? Is it lack of water or other resources? But it's our planet.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all on it together.
Right, right.
So, you know, that energy, it is very, very difficult sometimes, for me for sure, to feel a connection to people who I see doing harm.
Mm-hmm. You have trouble connecting to them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who are intentionally doing harm, and I have come across my fair share of them recently, and it's different from people who are bungling through and doing harm, but these are people who are, for whatever reason, their intention is to inflict harm.
Mm-hmm.
And
cool.
I have a hard time, not just because of my background in trauma, I have a hard time not experiencing them as dangerous sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I found it interesting the number of women that I talked to after the debates who felt, you know, that like they were dancing around their living room, feeling very like they had to watch, but they were feeling like traumatized or feeling like they wanted to be able to run out. My one assistant, she's like, she got all the laundry and she just was like, I have to fold it. You know, I couldn't sit still. I had to keep running around. And
why couldn't they sit still?
They were watching trauma, that he was menaced, kind of lurking over Hillary and kind of menacing her and stuff. And
right, but so why would they watch it?
Well, they wanted to. They felt they had to watch the debate.
Why?
Because, you know, I guess because they're, you know, whatever.
That's what I think is wrong.
They were feeling traumatized by watching.
Right, I understand,
yeah.
But I think it's wrong. I'm not positive, but.
Mm-hmm.
My hypothesis is it's wrong action. It's very,
okay.
Very important to keep informed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sat there and watched.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, I maintained a connection to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept asking me, is it in my best interest to remain here?
Right.
And rather quickly, it was, it's not. This is actually going to leave you harmed.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, okay, I can't watch this anymore. And there was, you know, my family was like, come on, you know. And I went, no, I have to be responsible for myself. I'm going to go read.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and so it's at odds sometimes with what I think, which is I should watch this. But what I know is that it's harming me, and I don't see a good reason to be harmed. When there are so many other ways to inform myself about what happened, I didn't need to have
mm-hmm.
the experience.
Got it.
So
got it.
Definitely,
I
you know, was up reading, I don't know, 5-6 newspapers versions of it,
mm-hmm.
briefly skimming it. I wasn't, you know, spending
right.
the day doing it. But I read enough so that there's nothing that I've heard in the days since that I wasn't aware of.
Right. Okay.
And yeah, there was also something that, pardon?
No, it's interesting because it's kind of a, you know, like I don't watch scary movies. I don't watch violent movies because I don't want my, you know, I do it on, one, I don't like watching them because I get too scared. But I also do it on a political, in a political sense. I don't want my dollar going towards watching people get murdered or killed. Supporting that in the theater, you know, I'll support, you know, give me a good play, I'm happy, but, you know, don't show me blowing up things. Even though I understand and certainly some of the movies I feel like I should watch, I just don't because I know they're going to bother me too much. But in this, because it was real, interestingly, I felt like I should watch it. And I did find myself, I had a friend over that night, and we were both kind of like, rawr, and she's very, very sensitive to that kind of like you, Michael. She's very sensitive to that. And she was like, can we turn this off? And I'm like, well, no, I think we have to watch it, you know. You know, I played the role of your family with her, that we need to somehow stay tuned to it, you know.
But we don't.
There was a part of me that wanted to leave. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that we recognize our sovereignty. We're giving up our sovereignty if we're subjecting ourselves to something that's harming us and feel that we're supposed to do that.
Yeah, interesting.
Why ever would we subject ourselves to something harmful that is not mandatory?
Right. Interesting.
So there are different ways of staying informed. But if no one watched this, I think that the polling numbers would be such that they would be concerned, at least those people,
mm-hmm.
not that I care, about our message is not one that people want to hear.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because there was nothing there that spoke to issues particularly.
No, really, it wasn't. It was just bashing each other.
Right, and if the star of the whole evening is that guy in the red sweater, that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing remarkable about him other than he seemed decent.
Right.
So if that's the star, in other words, if you aim as high as you can and you get to basic decency, that's a reflection of how below that we are, and that's not good.
Right, yeah.
But it's not okay to add your energy to the pool of Seth that we're being treated to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge distraction from what's really going on.
Right. Yep. Interesting. Kind of wild stuff.
So I think really it's very, very important to achieve personal sovereignty. In other words, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
what are your values? And to stick
mm-hmm.
with them.
Right. To be clear what they are and to be focused on them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honor them. You know. Yeah. See, No, it's interesting because I did have a little war in me, but I made myself watch it.
And did you, if you can go back to that moment, at the end of it, did you feel more or less energy?
Less, definitely less.
So that's an indication that you did something that was not helpful to yourself.
Right. Yeah.
Because we don't want to give our energy away right now.
No. Mm-mm. No.
Because there's
a big
effort being made, evidenced by what's going on in the Republican Party, to really suck up as much energy and have, parts of the Republican Party, not all, parts are really reducing themselves to a mob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's not good.
Yeah.
Or there were. I read this morning that a whole bunch of senators who withdrew support have now turned around, and because they got a lot of angry flack from crowds that their reelection is at stake. So now they're reversing themselves. Well, at no point are they connected to themselves.
Right.
They're connected to their desire to prevail. And that can be taken away from you. So you want to connect to something that cannot be taken away from you. And your trust and your respect in who you are is something no one else can take away from you. That's the most important thing. People can do whatever they do. And stick with it. You know, I just had a loading dose of all of that because while Jean was in the hospital, I was confronted with a broken system. And my life hasn't been lived with an acceptance of broken systems. It was, Jean and I would never have been allowed to adopt our daughter Rachel in 1988 had I acceded to the system because the system said, no, you can't do this. And I didn't at all focus on watch me. I focused on no one is getting in between me and my daughter.
Right.
I am going to parent her. So we had to fight the United States government because she was born in Washington, D.C. We had to fight New York and we had to fight in California. But in the end, we were both her legal parents. So I don't have a history which supports the system's broken, accept it. So that's what one layer of a person there was doing. But a whole bunch of other people were, I mean, you know, a teaching hospital, so many, many, many people. And hiding in, I've reinforced my feeling that any place that really values clinical detachment is a very good hiding place for sociopaths. And there are a sprinkling of sociopaths throughout the medical system. And I, with my history, they spot me immediately and I spot them. And so it's showdown time. And that's quite rough. But the thing
What happens when they know you've seen them as a sociopath? What do they do?
Well, the first thing they do is they try to prevail. One of them, I mean, the last thing that happened was somebody, a resident, tried to release Jean on Monday night. I got finished seeing patients at home, and it was a week ago. And Jean was to stay in the hospital through Tuesday because they wanted to do something. But this doctor tried to release him Monday. And I was able to put a stop to it. So I had not yet met her, but she did not like that she'd been stopped. I went over her head and quashed it. And so she gave him between 4 and 8 times the dosage she should have given him on something given him to sleep.
Wow.
So she basically put him at risk.
Yeah, really.
So she did that. She also okayed it for him to get other medication that he should not have gotten. So she just went in and did this. But I was able to, I'm not sure exactly, like that is staying with me and it's over a week ago and I look at these things like, why is it staying with me? And I first looked at, do I have a need to punish her? In other words, do I need, or go under that? It's, do I need to prevail? Do I need the upper hand? And it wasn't that. And then I looked at what was bothering me, and it was bothering me a little that I wonder how many other people she harmed and got away with.
Right.
Because we're there all the time. And But really what it is underneath everything is I'm afraid I'm going to run into her again and have to go through this. So there's this terror that comes, and that terror really comes from feeling isolated and separated from others.
Right.
Now, the reality is, as she did these things, there were also very lighted souls who were able to help me.
Right.
So
you
I wasn't alone.
No, that's not supposed to happen.
Right. So when people are isolated
mm-hmm.
and terrorized, they're going to mm-hmm. be at great risk for contracting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And regressing. So part of what we're seeing is that, you know, all of these women who are coming forward are, who knows what their experience was, but they feel safer coming forward as a group or joining another body of energy that's coming forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the same thing happened with Cosby.
Right.
Right. Right.
Right. So, so that's that. But the other piece of it is that if you go up against the system or an organized group of people, they're going to pathologize your attempt to stop them.
Right. Right. Because you're trying to get them to behave themselves or do what they do.
Yeah, in the case at the hospital, it was there were people who were wrong.
Right.
And I can read the energy, you know, that I sometimes wish I couldn't, but I can. And I would go, I know what they're going to write in the records. And then I walked around feeling at risk because
mm-hmm.
other people would come and read the records, and I would notice that
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't ask me what happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they were not getting, you know, that was the best weapon is to add a narrative, which is one-sided, to a record, which is skewed.
Right.
And that we're seeing played out in the political arena.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, people are not saying, what was he thinking when he did this?
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at the meaning they make of that behavior. And that meaning is I'm not invalidating it at all. I'm just saying that in my perspective, I don't know that they're really focusing in on what was intended.
Mm-hmm.
And what was intended is quite a dangerous quality for a president to have. Which is in each
right.
situation, they must prevail in a way that supports their sense of themselves.
Right.
That's not something a leader, you want in a leader.
No. Not in the least. And every leader I've ever had that did that, I've gone, oh, no, you're not my leader, I got to go.
Right, and the stakes are quite high here because we don't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
And it's happening all over the world.
Mm-hmm. No colony on Mars yet. Wow. Right. Well, the British lady says we're done.
Okay.
And you're in Hudson till Sunday?
No, we're going to come back tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
Yeah.
Does Jean have to go back to the hospital, or are you guys good for the weekend in the city?
We're in the city. A friend of ours is going to be in town who we haven't seen in a long time. We're going to see her and her husband tomorrow night.
Well, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
And is Rachel still there?
Yes. Oh, yeah, she's here.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. And everybody has their own room, which I think is good.
Yes.
Michael and Jean and Rachel have a beautiful home up in Hudson. It's really, it's like one of those places you walk into and you feel like every corner of the room is just full of love, and you want to sit in any chair in the house and go, I've never been to your apartment in the city. It's probably like that too, but the house in Hudson is really just beautiful. And they have a gorgeous backyard with all sorts of green.
It's just very lush and delicious. So lots of lushes and delicious, wonderful things to you.
I hope you have a good time.
I know. I'm looking forward to it. I'm still in California. On Thursday, we're going to be in Palm Springs. So I will call you from there.
Okay.
If you're still up to doing it next week.
Yes,
you know,
I'll be good.
Okay, cool.
All right. But I'll confirm it. But it looks good.
All right, good. Okay. And the rest of you, happy Scorpio talking. We're back.
Yeah.
Big hugs. All right. Love
and progress. We're progressed.
Yeah.
Progress.
Bye, Annie.
Yeah, bye, really. Annie. Bye.